All right, everyone, buckle up, because today we are diving deep into the crazy world where global politics and economics and U.S. domestic policy like all crash into each other.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mess out there.
It is. And we've got some seriously eye-opening sources for this deep dive. We've got a financial market analysis that's predicting some, well, let's just say economic turbulence.
Yeah, and some political news, both international and domestic. That's, well, it's going to make your head spin.
It really is. So by the end of this, you'll practically be a walking newsfeed. But don't worry, we'll make it fun. Promise.
That's the key, right? Making sense of it all without losing your mind.
Exactly. So let's kick things off with this economic roller coaster we seem to be on. This market analysis is predicting a longer than expected period of Quad 4, which, okay, I'll admit, sounds a bit like something out of Star Trek.
Right, like some kind of like alternate dimension.
Totally. So in plain English, what does that actually mean for us regular folks?
Okay, so picture this. The economy is like stuck in slow motion, but prices keep creeping up. That's Quad 4, slow growth and inflation at the same time. And historically, when that happens, it makes businesses nervous to invest, the markets get all jittery, and everyone feels the squeeze, you know?
Now, it's not exactly a recipe for a good time.
Definitely not. But here's the thing. This time around, there's an added layer of complexity, let's call it. The U.S. Treasury needs to refinance, get this $9 trillion in debt over the next 3 years.
$9 trillion. Okay. Yeah. Now I'm officially nervous. But I mean, what does that even mean for, you know, for me, for the average person? Why should I care about all this financial jargon?
Well, think of it this way. It's like the U.S. government has this massive bill coming due. And to pay it off, they're basically asking to borrow more money. But because they're already carrying so much debt, investors are starting to get a little, let's say, skeptical.
So they're seen as a risky bet.
Exactly. So investors are demanding higher interest rates on those loans. And that's where Scott Bessent comes in. He's the guy in charge of managing this whole debt refinancing situation, especially trying to keep interest rates on the 10-year treasury yield from, you know, going through the roof.
So he's kind of like a financial tightrope walker, trying to keep the whole economy from taking a nosedive.
They could say that, yeah.
And is he going to be able to pull it off? I mean, $9 trillion, that's...
It's a lot, yeah. Well, this analysis we're looking at, it suggests that a lot of folks, especially these, what they call bond vigilantes.
Bond vigilantes. Okay, that sounds intense.
Right. So these bond vigilantes, they're basically big-time investors who keep a really close eye on government debt, and they're known to sell off bonds if they think the government is taking on too much risk, which drives up interest rates, which makes it even more expensive for the government to borrow money.
It's a vicious cycle.
It can be, yeah. And in this case, these bond vigilantes, they're worried about Bessent's strategy. See, he's relying a lot on issuing short-term debt, which, you know, might buy some time, but it's not really a long-term solution.
It's like kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
Right? But eventually you run out of road.
Exactly. And this analysis, they're saying that these investors aren't buying Bessent's promises of deficit reduction either.
Really? Why not?
Well, they're calling it a contradictory approach. I mean, think about it. How can you promise to cut the deficit while also, you know, extending those Trump-era tax cuts? It just doesn't add up.
Yeah, that does seem kind of counterproductive.
Right. And then you've got other things adding to the pressure on Bessent, too. Like, for example, the sheer amount of 10-year notes the Treasury needs to auction off this year. It's way higher than it was last year.
So they need to borrow more money, but fewer people are willing to lend it to them.
Yeah.
It's not good.
It creates a ton of uncertainty, that's for sure. And to make matters even worse, you have foreign investors, particularly China, reducing their holdings of U.S. treasuries.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of a perfect storm brewing.
Yeah, you could say that. It's definitely a situation to keep an eye on.
Okay, I'm definitely feeling a little uneasy now. But I think it's really important for us to break this down for our listeners. How does all of this high-level financial stuff, how does it actually connect to us? What are the real-world consequences if these interest rates keep climbing?
Well, think about it this way. If those bond yields keep going up, it means interest rates on everything. Your mortgage, car loans, credit cards are all likely to follow suit. Businesses face higher borrowing costs, which could lead to slower growth, maybe even job losses. It's like this ripple effect that hits everyone.
So the stakes are pretty high.
Yeah, they are. And it's not just on the economic front, you know? Things aren't exactly peaceful on the global stage either.
That's for sure. Our next source takes us to this summit of European leaders. And apparently the tension was, well, you could cut it with a knife.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of it all was Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine.
Yeah, and this summit, it wasn't just a European Union thing, you know? Leaders from Turkey and Norway were there too, which kind of broadened the scope of the discussions.
Right. It sounds like Zelensky's arrival wasn't exactly met with, like, open arms by everyone.
Yeah, there's this almost comical anecdote about Mark Rutte, the Dutch prime minister. So he's known for his political maneuvering, right? And he apparently went out of his way to praise Trump, even though Trump's stance on Ukraine has been, well, let's just say less than enthusiastic.
Oh, wow. So it was like a calculated move, trying to butter Trump up to ensure continued U.S. support for Ukraine.
It definitely seems that way. And, you know, it really shows the delicate balancing act that a lot of these leaders are facing right now. They want to take a strong stance against Russian aggression, but they also don't want to alienate the US, which is, you know, a key ally.
Yeah, I can see how that would be tricky. It's like picking your battles.
Exactly. And then on the other hand, you have leaders like Robert Fico, Slovakia's prime minister, who's taking a totally different approach. He's openly pro-Russia, refusing to help Ukraine, even threatened to veto any actions against Russia at the upcoming European Council meeting.
Wow, so it's a pretty divided front.
It is, and it's a stark reminder of how complicated the geopolitical landscape really is. It's not, you know, a simple good guys versus bad guys situation.
Right, there's so much history, economic ties, and all those domestic political pressures influencing how each country is responding to this crisis in Ukraine.
Exactly.
Okay, listener, get ready for this one. Our next source throws out this question that's both fascinating and kind of terrifying. Is this the end of the Pax Americana?
Ooh, yeah, that's a big one.
It is. I got chills when I read that. So, for those who might not be familiar, can you give us a quick rundown of what the Pax Americana actually was?
Sure. So for roughly 80 years, the US has been the main player shaping the global order, right? And this period, it was marked by relative peace and stability, at least among the Western powers, and it was driven mainly by American economic and military might.
So it's not just that the U.S. was a superpower. It was like a whole system built around American leadership.
Right.
And now this source is suggesting that that whole system is like collapsing.
That's what they're implying, yeah. They're proposing that we're shifting to a new model, one based on these spheres of influence. Imagine the world divided up with China dominating Asia, Russia controlling Europe, and the US holding onto the Western hemisphere. It's a completely different dynamic.
So are we basically going back to the old days of like empires and colonies?
In a sense, yeah. And it's not just some abstract theory either. This shift would have real-world consequences for all of us. Like, it would affect our daily lives.
Okay, so let's make this concrete. Can you give us an example of how this new world order could actually play out in our everyday lives?
Okay, well, think about the car industry. Taiwan is a major hub for semiconductor production. You know, those tiny chips that are in everything these days, from smartphones to, well, cars.
Right.
So if China were to gain control of Taiwan, it could disrupt that whole supply chain, which would lead to shortages, price hikes, you name it. Imagine your next car costing like tens of thousands of dollars more just because of some geopolitical power move on the other side of the world.
It's kind of scary to think about, honestly.
It is. And it's not just cars. It could affect everything. Our access to technology, the prices we pay for goods, global trade, you know, everything.
So we've got this potential end of the Pax Americana, a world increasingly divided up into these spheres of influence, all while facing this economic turmoil that
Right.
could impact everything from our daily expenses to like the stability of the global economy.
Yeah.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. And we're just getting started.
That's right. As we continue this deep dive, we're going to explore how these global shifts are playing out right here in the U.S. and what it all means for you, our listeners. So stay tuned. So we've got all these global power shifts happening, and it's starting to feel like, well, like the ground is shifting under our feet.
Yeah, it's definitely a time of great uncertainty.
It is. But how are these like tremors, how are they being felt here in the U.S.? What does it all mean for us on like the home front?
Well, for one thing, it seems Russia and China are, you know, kind of taking advantage of the current situation.
What do you mean?
Well, our sources, they're pointing to this concerning trend. They're actively targeting disgruntled and potentially financially vulnerable former federal employees.
Wait, really? That sounds like something out of a spy movie.
Right. It's kind of wild, but it makes sense when you think about
How
it.
so?
Well, you've got these highly skilled individuals, right? And suddenly they're out of work, many of them with top-level security clearances. And they're feeling, you know, angry, betrayed. It makes them prime targets for foreign intelligence agencies looking to exploit their expertise and their access.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I can see how someone in that position, feeling vulnerable, could be manipulated.
Exactly. And according to our sources, both Russia and China have like these sophisticated operations in place. They're even using platforms like LinkedIn to target individuals with job offers that, well, that seemed too good to be true.
Which, let's be honest, they probably are.
Right. But if you're desperate, if you're feeling disillusioned, it's easy to see how someone might fall for it.
So, how big of a deal is this really? Could this actually impact national security?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these individuals, they have access to sensitive information. They know U.S. intelligence gathering techniques. They might even have like personal connections within the government. It's a serious vulnerability.
This is really concerning. What's being done to stop it?
Well, that's the thing. The source, it suggests that instead of like tackling this recruitment threat head on, the U.S. intelligence community seems more focused on punishing those who might already be compromised.
Really? So instead of preventing it, they're just waiting for something to happen and then reacting.
It seems that way, yeah. They even quote Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, as saying that these individuals' loyalty is to themselves and not to America.
Wow. It almost seems like a missed opportunity, though. If they focus more on understanding why these people are feeling disillusioned in the first place, maybe they could prevent them from being recruited.
That's a great point. By prioritizing punishment over prevention, they're like creating this climate of fear and distrust within the intelligence community, which ironically might just push even more people into the arms of foreign adversaries.
Almost like they're shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay, so we've got potential spies, economic uncertainty, and a world that seems, on the brink of a major power shift. Anything else we need to be worried about?
Well, it wouldn't be America without a good old-fashioned culture war, would it?
Oh boy, here we go.
Right. One of our sources highlights Trump's recent executive order making English the official language of the U.S.
Oh yeah, this one definitely taps into those anxieties about immigration and cultural change that have been like simmering for a while. And it's interesting, over 30 states already have similar laws, but this executive order takes it to like the federal level.
Right. Now all government business will be conducted in English, which, might not seem like a huge deal to some, but for immigrant communities, many of whom are still learning English or rely on government services in their native language, it can be a real barrier.
It's like it just adds fuel to that us versus them
Yeah,
fire,
exactly. And it's not just language either. The source also mentions Trump's aggressive approach to deportations, including the possibility of sending immigrants to El Salvador.
Oh wow, that's getting a lot of attention,
Yeah.
especially the possibility of them using that prison in El Salvador, CECOT, which they say has a capacity of like 40,000 inmates.
It's a very controversial policy, to say the least, and it raises all sorts of questions about the treatment of immigrants and the U.S. government's responsibility towards them.
Yeah, it's a really complicated issue. So we've got potential spies, economic worries, global power struggles, and this like deepening cultural divide. It's starting to feel pretty bleak,
Get a
honestly.
lot, yeah. But then there's this one little detail in our research that really surprised me.
Oh, what's that?
So our source mentions this group of Latino voters in Texas, and get this, they're actually happy with the way Trump is dismantling the federal government.
Wait, really? I mean, I know his policies are popular with some, but happy.
Happy. They express this deep distrust of the government. They feel like it hasn't done anything to help them. They see Trump's actions as a way of like shaking things up, even if it means cuts to programs they might benefit from.
So they're so disillusioned with the system that they're willing to embrace any change, even if it brings chaos.
It seems that way, yeah. And it's not just a few people either. This sentiment is like pretty widespread among this group.
Wow. It's a reminder that things aren't always black and white, There's so much nuance to these issues.
Exactly. And sometimes the most unexpected perspectives can be the most illuminating. They challenge us to think differently, to consider viewpoints that we might not have considered before.
It's like, even in the midst of all this turmoil, there are still people who are finding ways to hope, to believe in a better future.
It's inspiring, really. And it's a good reminder that we can't give up, We have to keep searching for solutions, keep fighting for what we believe in.
That's a powerful message. And speaking of fighting for what you believe in, we can't ignore the frustration brewing within the Democratic Party itself. Our sources are pointing to the CNN poll, and it says like a whopping 73% of Democrats feel like their party just isn't doing enough to push back against Trump's agenda.
Yeah, there's definitely the sense that the Democrats are constantly playing defense, just reacting to Trump's moves instead of, actually taking a proactive stance.
Right, it's like they're always one step behind.
Exactly. And it's causing a lot of frustration among the Democratic base.
Yeah.
They want their leaders to, like, show some teeth, you know?
Yeah, I get that. But it can't be easy for them either, right? I mean, they're up against a very, let's just say, a very aggressive opponent.
Oh, for sure. And they don't have a lot of leverage right now, especially with the Republicans controlling the House. It's an uphill battle, no doubt.
You could even see this, like, discontent leading to primary challenges from the left, similar to what happened with the Tea Party movement within the Republican Party a few years back.
Oh, absolutely. It's a real possibility. And that kind of infighting, it just makes it even harder for the Democrats to present a united front.
Which is exactly what Trump wants, right?
Right.
A divided opposition.
Exactly. And speaking of divisions, let's circle back to that issue that seems to be fracturing American society more than just about anything else. Yeah. Immigration.
Right. We've already touched on Trump's, you know, hardline stance and his aggressive approach to deportations. But there was one development that really stood out to me in our research.
You mean his decision to, like, fast track deportations, bypassing the usual court hearings for certain immigrants?
Yeah, that's the one. It seems like a pretty radical move.
Yeah.
What are the implications of that?
Well, essentially, anyone who entered the country illegally and hasn't, like, formally completed the asylum application process, they could be deported immediately. No questions asked. No chance to even make their case before a judge.
So no due process.
It's definitely raising some serious legal and ethical concerns, yeah. And it sounds like they're specifically targeting those who came in through that program the Biden administration set up for people from Nicaragua and Venezuela.
Right, the one that was supposed to be more humane and orderly, right?
Exactly. So this move, it's clearly an attempt to undo the policies of the previous administration and, you know, send a message about Trump's commitment to stricter immigration enforcement.
I mean, the message is loud and clear, that's for sure. But it's also creating a lot of fear and confusion among immigrant communities. They don't know what their rights are anymore. They're worried about being separated from their families. It's
a mess. And then there's the whole issue of sending people to countries they're not even citizens of. Like sending Guatemalans to El Salvador, for example.
Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster, right?
It's a very troubling policy. And our sources even suggest that the administration might be working on deals with countries like El Salvador, basically paying them to take in deportees.
So we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. Mm. We've talked about economic uncertainty, those shifting global power dynamics, political upheaval, and this cultural divide that just seems to be getting wider and wider. It's a lot.
It is. And it can feel pretty overwhelming, honestly.
It really can. So as we wrap up, I think it's important to remind our listeners that, you know, we're not just passive observers in all of this.
That's so important.
We're all participants in a way. Mm. And our actions, even the small ones, they can have an impact.
They really can. Staying informed, engaging in thoughtful discussions, holding our elected officials accountable. These are all ways that we can participate in shaping the future.
And maybe most importantly, we can't give in to that cynicism and despair. It's easy to get bogged down in all the negativity, but we have to remember that there's still hope. You know, we have the power to make a difference.
Absolutely. We need to believe in our collective ability to create change and keep working towards a more just and equitable future, even when things feel dark.
So well said. Well, listener, we're going to leave you with one final thought to ponder. If, as our sources suggest, the Pax Americana is truly over, what does that mean for you? What role will you play in shaping the world that comes next? It's a big question, but it's one worth thinking about.
It really is, because the choices we make today, they're going to determine the course of our future.
So stay curious, stay engaged, and never stop believing in your ability to make a difference. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.